I live in Israel. This season is dedicated to the memory of the 1,400 of my countrymen who were massacred on October 7th and the 240 people that were kidnapped and are being held hostage by the terrorist organization Hamas. Hopefully they will be returned to their families as soon as possible, and hopefully this terrible war will be able to come to a peaceful end very soon. Welcome to Minute 34 of Season 6 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we take a cap-rest journey through the 1946 classic, It's a Wonderful Life, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Niall McGowan of the Bat Minute. Welcome back to the show, Niall.
Oh, I was almost out of here. I was going to go off to college and live a great, rich, and fulfilling life, but no, I'm stuck doing this podcast, goddammit. No, I love being here, Rob. Thank you. Thank you again for having me.
No, back. I know you're having fun here. I always enjoy having you on. So we always see that these are minutes that have things that are interesting that are going on, but you know, we still find even more to talk about. You know, so yeah. Because it's just a whiplash, it's just too, a board meeting. Just a board meeting, you know.
Yeah. This is because like last time I was here talking about Die Hard 2, like It's a Wonderful Life. It's like there's a whiplash of topics right there, but let's go for it.
That's right, and why not? You know, it's the idea of not necessarily doing the same thing over and over. You know,
Yeah, no, totally.
We need to switch things around a little bit here and there. So why not? You know, that works. So episode 34 begins with the words $5,000 and ends with Potter trying to get his motion seconded. trying to move his motion along. You know, that's the thing. It's he's sick of it already. We talked about yesterday that he was yawning. I'm surprised he hasn't already fallen asleep.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's been waiting 3 weeks as well.
3 months. Three months.
So yeah, I can imagine he is just like, just give me the damn building and loan with you already.
That's right.
But the thing I really love about this minute in particular is we kind of alluded to in previous episodes is that, you know, George goes into a very passionate sort of diatribe, and in the background, in the same frame, is the portrait of his dad. Which feels like, you know, it's the spirit of his father living on in his son. I think it's obviously very deliberately, you know, positioned that way. As he's his most passionate talking about the business and about what's right, damn it, and all this kind of stuff. That it's actually, you see his dad in the background as well. I think it's a very nice touch they've done there.
Right, because it's basically showing that he has gotten this whole... part of his backbone for the whole thing comes from watching his father over the years doing all these things. Yeah, you know, George obviously is more of a he has more of a heart than his father possibly did. You know, but we never really got to see enough of his father. You know, to understand how he did things and what he did, but we do know that he was able to keep the Savings and Load afloat for 25 years. Despite everything and fighting, you know, we know he for at least 10 years has been having fights with Potter about it. You know, and he explained, you know, 2 weeks ago at the dinner table, you know, he explained to George why Potter is the way that he is. So, you know, that helps also. So as you said, the fact that we can see him having this conversation and his father is more or less looking on maybe in an approving way. You know, maybe you can look at it from that perspective.
Yeah, totally. Totally. It's, it's almost literally like the specter of his dad.
That's right.
You know, it's almost cheesy in that way, but I think it's a really beautiful touch. Again, because the film wasn't shown as much over here. As it, you know, I know it's a its reputation in America is like, oh, it's on multiple times every Christmas.
Well, you know why it's you know why you why it started becoming a Christmas favorite, because basically they allowed the copyright to run out, so therefore anyone could use it and it would be free, and they just started showing it, and it just happened to be shown so much that it ended up becoming a Christmas favorite.
That kind of makes it even more ridiculous, though, that it's like, there's not like, you know, there's not like a million remakes, or I guess there's a million remakes in that, like, TV shows and stuff will riff on it over and over. But like, I'm really surprised if not they only remade it officially the one time. I thought there would have been a friggin' the Grinch is getting tapped dry the minute. You know,
but why remake something that's near perfect? You know, the Grinch you never cannot say is perfect. Yeah. That is true.
It's just like, you know, if it's an IP that people recognize, so we got to go back to it. But the same thing, yeah, I love it. You know, no one's ever, I guess they did also, they made a TV show out of Casablanca. So when they realize one time it doesn't work, and then nowadays they're like, ah, that's an old movie. That's black and white. Nobody cares about that.
Right.
So they met them. But because of that, though, like, I'm not as familiar with, there's no scene where George tells his dad about, like, what happened with Mr. Gower. Like, that's a genuine secret he keeps. Like,
no, we understand that, because he says when Clarence and Joseph are talking, it's mentioned that Joseph said he never told a soul.
He never told anybody. I always wonder if, like, if he told his dad, what his dad would have thought about, like, oh yeah, so you know, he could have poisoned these, you know, he could have poisoned this person, but like, you know, I covered for him and stuff. It was a real shock if his dad was like, what? Oh my God, it's so reckless of you. What the? He could have poisoned like five more people that same day. Why do you have to tell somebody about these things? that could have been the real thing. Yeah, if you just mentioned it to somebody else, it might have been like, Jesus, George, you can't just, the guy's clearly unhinged. Somebody had to go in and tell him to close up shop for a couple of days or something, at least.
Yeah, but I mean, that was 10 years ago, and he had a good enough reason for it. So. Yeah.
Maybe something that mentioned, like, yeah, there was like a Mr. Gower did a lot of people on Mr. Gower's medication that week ended up dying weirdly later on too.
Surprisingly, there were so many people who died of the Spanish flu in Bedford Falls that year. I don't know how that happened. How did that happen?
Joyce is like, oh, I was too. I'm also a little bit disappointed in that kid for not doing a Jimmy Stewart impression when he was young, George. Maybe he just didn't have the. But yeah, I mean, again, talking about, you know, comparing him to Chris Walken. In Batman Returns, the guy playing Chip Shrek, Max Shrek's Chris Walken's son, is flat out doing a Chris Walken impression.
Oh, for sure.
That makes sense, Dad.
For sure.
And that kid really should have been like, you know, okay, I'm going to go off and see the world.
Well, it's like what happened in Forrest Gump. You know, Tom Hanks based his accent on the kid who plays him as a kid.
Other guys who got in, so I think someone introduced me recently to like a version of Merlin, like the story of Merlin, like a big 3-hour retelling of Merlin with Sam Neill.
And yeah, that was a TV movie in the late 90s, early aughts, something like that. Maybe it was 1997.
But a friend of mine was just talking about, like, oh, it's ridiculous because, like, you see at the start when they're younger, because Isabella Rossellini has such a distinct way of speaking. They have to just dub the actress playing her as a kid with Isabella Rossellini. And it's just so glaring that it's just like a full-grown Isabella Rossellini's voice coming out of this teenage girl and stuff. And it doesn't sync up properly and stuff. I was like, oh, wow, I have to see this. I'll sit through all 3 hours of that just to see that.
Yeah. Here, I was right. Yeah, it was 1998, and it was with Sam Neill and Helena Bonham Carter. John Gielgud, Rutger Hauer, James Earl Jones, Miranda Richardson, Isabella Rossellini. There you go. You're right. Martin Short.
Yeah. It's the best. But he has a pretty stellar cast for a TV movie in the 90s, to be fair.
Yeah, for sure.
But no, I would have loved the idea had, like, you know, Jimmy Stewart coming in to dub that kid or something, like, oh, don't hurt my ear anymore now. Just like, it just doesn't sync up at all.
Yeah.
Like, well, people ask why the kid doesn't sound like him later on, so what do you want us to do?
Well, maybe that's maybe he could be why like, oh, his...
it was the ear. The ear.
That's right. That's right. The ear made him change his voice. Who knows? That would be interesting if that was the case.
Yeah.
So,
as the minute goes on, as he's talking as well, though, just to further emphasize his father's portrait in the background, there is a very deliberate, he does a very deliberate kind of shoulder move as if he's kind of moving in to Potter. I also believe that is like to highlight that the picture is behind him. So I just wanted to point that out as well, that like, it wasn't just like, oh, it happens in the background. I feel like they're actually positioning him within like the blocking of the scene and stuff as well. To like, mm-hmm. Jimmy, make sure you go over and stand in this, tilt your shoulder that way, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah. Just wanted to point that out there as well.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. So basically, you know, this whole minute starts with, you know, him continuing his I guess rebuttal to Potter. So at the end of yesterday's minute, he says, "Do you know how long it takes a working man to save $5,000? Just remember this, Mr. Potter, that this rabble you're talking about, they do most of the working and paying and living and dying in this community. Well, is it too much to have them work and pay and live and die in a couple of decent rooms and a bath?" And, you know, I would have expected Potter to, at this point, answer and say, yeah. It's too much to ask for. I mean, again, it goes back. That's right. It goes back to what we were talking about yesterday, that Potter wants everyone to need him. You know, and if you don't have financial security, then you need Potter. So that sort of makes sense. So for him to want to keep them down and keep them as rabble and, you know, keeping them, yes, they do most of the working and paying and living and dying. But, you know, Potter and people like him are not the ones who want to do that.
It's not like an official, like, you know, movie tie-in, but apparently there was a novelization of It's a Wonderful Life that came out like 50 years later or something. I don't know if it's worth tracking down.
I mean, I have a copy of the script. I have a copy of the script, which is pretty much word for word. And there was also a stage play that is a shorter script that I also got from that. But, you know, I decided this season not to talk about the differences because it's almost word for word. You know, there isn't much to really change that.
Yeah. I just wonder, like, little things in terms of, like, characterization. Like, although Pinus novelization is only 180 pages, so I can't really imagine it's doing... It must have cut out a lot of stuff or something. But just in terms of Potter's novel, his characterization in that, like, wanting people to need him is that, like, you know, again, he doesn't seem like he has many people around him except for people who are paid to be there.
But he must have people that are running to him that need his help, need loans from him. You know, that not necessarily friends. The people that are around him are the people who are directly serving him. But you know, the fact that other people might need him or need his help, you know, at a cost, he doesn't care.
Again, the thing about that may be, again, there could be a potential the tragic side of Potter is just like, yeah, he doesn't know he has nobody else. So that's why he wants to be in this position. He wants people to need him because otherwise no one would talk to him.
That's
like right. he would literally just be sat by himself all the time. It could become out of not so much a, it's always going to be in part like a money grubbing capitalistic venture on his part, but also it could be that he's genuinely a very lonely man. And at this point in his life where he has no wife, he's no family, he's got nothing. He doesn't know how else to socialize with people because he was raised to be this way, that he just needs people to come to him. Like it's more of a, if I don't have these people, if I don't have the rabble, I have nobody. Like
here's some interesting things that you probably don't know. In one of the original scripts or the earlier scripts of this movie, the idea was is that George and Harry were playing, I think, baseball, and the ball went into Potter's yard, and they went there, and he started chasing them. And when he was chasing them, that's when Harry fell into the water and needed to be saved.
Of thing.
We do see in the movie itself.
I was gonna have convinced him it was gonna be that, like, as he's chasing them, he falls over and like breaks his back or something. And it's gonna be the Bailey boys actually put him in that wheelchair. It's like, oh wow, that would really change the movie. To be fair,
right. I mean, but that would have been so. Therefore, he would blame the Baileys for him being a cripple. Interesting. Yeah.
It could be like Mr. Potter was never the same way after the Baileys broke
his back. No, but he was chasing the if he's chasing the kids in the first place, that's already, you know,
Anybody broke his window. Like, well, it's just standard procedure. Someone breaks your window, you chase after them.
Yeah. Right. And in the movie itself, in the scenes in 1919, when they're sledding on the pond, you know, with the shovel, so you see in the background a sign that says "Property of Henry Potter" or something like that, meaning that they are right on his property or right next to his property when this is all going on.
Okay. Oh, I can imagine. Yeah, it would be like, yeah, that'd be. This is a little extra icing on the cake, though, of George Bailey lost his hearing on Potter property. Kind of like it's
right.
And then Potter also been like, well, you shouldn't have been there in the first place. You got no one but yourself to blame.
That's right. But then again, it would be a tragic story. The fact that you know, George loses his hearing, but Potter loses the use of his legs.
Yeah. It's like, both these men, they're killing each other. They're taken limb by limb. Literally, it's like the sequel come back. You know, one of them's got like a metal jaw, like a fake eye and stuff. I was like, yeah, I lost my good eye to George Bailey back in.
Well, then you're starting to get into, you know, like Bond villains and stuff like that. I don't know.
That's the other one thing too. So I'm sure you've talked about as well. Like, I do kind of want to see. I'm surprised. To be fair, I've not looked. On the internet, all these things they might well exist if you dig deep enough. But,
right.
Because obviously, you know, Mrs. Deagle in Gremlins is so blatantly based on Potter.
Yeah, of course.
As well. This is one of if anyone's ever done any like fan fiction of those two hooking up. Maybe that would have been and the only thing. Or you could also do like fan fiction of like, oh yeah, Gremlins is set in the same universe as of It's a Wonderful Life. And so Mrs. Deagle, she's actually like a, you know,
she's Potter's daughter.
His daughter, or it's like this is his long lost love or something. Like, so it's like, oh yeah, they had a thing together. But because of course he's ageless, so it doesn't, you know, the age difference doesn't really matter. It's like, yes, you know, it was their version of Twilight. It's like, yes, I was 17, he was 520. Like it doesn't matter when things get to that level. But the grand sweeping romance of like, yeah, what happens? And then George Bailey had to come and get those people gave him money, and my beloved died of a stroke that very Christmas night. And so yeah, she moves to Kingston Falls.
From like Bedford Falls to Kingston Falls. This is one ranks to the other.
Yeah. It's just like, well, you know, something vaguely familiar. So I'll go to a town that's basically like Bedford Falls. But
that's right.
Yeah. Makes that was always the weird thing too, because I think I saw Gremlins first. I grew up on Gremlins, but I didn't see It's a Wonderful Life until I was in my teens.
I definitely saw Gremlins first.
Yeah, it was weird watching it then, been like, oh. And the more you watch both, you're like, it's a deliberate thing. They're making it be like the town, and it's a wag. That's why it's got falls in the name and stuff. Because they're kind of they're riffing on the whole thing. I see what they're doing here.
Correct.
But I do also wonder too, like if they switched that the Potter chasing them thing. If they thought like, oh, he wouldn't, not so much that he, you know, that he's in a wheelchair. It's more that, oh, he wouldn't get up to do that. He would have his guy go and do that.
Ah, like, that's awesome. Right.
Yeah. He probably the guy next to him was just like, you know, he'd snap his fingers and then this guy, who I get the vibe, never talks. Like, he has that vibe about like, it's a real I'm not paying you to talk kind of, you know, thing. Or that, or it's like Potter's had his tongue removed or something. He's just like, yes, I'm
okay.
He is my,
now we're getting. Now we're going into some very interesting territory.
he's been my side man for 700 years now. Like, he'd just be praised for the release of death, but no, I'm keeping him here. He's the only guy who knows how to darn my socks correctly.
So. That's right. It's very true, and then George continues and goes anyway. My father didn't think so. People were human beings to him, but to you, a warped, frustrated old man, they're cattle. Well, in my book, he died a much richer man than you'll ever be. So, again, I mean, George is doing his best to defend his father here. He's doing a great job of the whole thing, showing that his father thought of people as people, not as cattle. So, yeah. I actually looked up the term of what cattle means. And what's very interesting, I mean, nowadays we know what cattle means. Cattle means, you know, it's a group of cows or, you know, some sort of you know, animal like a cow. But the original term of cattle from the 13th century, it meant property.
Oh.
And it took about 300 years till it started describing cows. So by him saying, you know, that you know, people were human beings to him, but to you, a warped, frustrated old man, they're cattle. So it makes even more sense for it to be that way. He's not saying they're cows. He's basically saying, to you, they're property. You know, you're just using them to make money. That's it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it fits in. It fits in with the definition.
Hmm. I do wonder if they, in writing the screenplay, if they were aware of that meaning. Because it does work very, very well. But they might have been like, oh, we're literally referring to cows here.
Yeah, it could be. It's very, very possible that that's what they meant. But, you know, it's always nice to be able to look into it and decide on our own how we want to do it, you know. Why not?
Yeah.
We can push things off a little bit, you know.
That's basically what Movies by Minutes podcasting is all about as well.
Yeah, of course.
You know, am I pushing this too far? No, that's what you do when you look at these things in this much detail.
Exactly. And then Potter screams back at him and goes, "Well, I'm not interested in your book. I'm talking about the building and loan." And then George turns to him and goes, "I know very well what you're talking about. You're talking about something you can't get your fingers on, and it's galling you. That's what you're talking about. I know. Well, I've said too much. You're the board here. You do what you want with this thing. There's just one more thing, though. This town needs this measly one-horse institution, if only to have some place where people can come without crawling to Potter. Come on, Uncle Billy." So, again, I mean, this, well, I mentioned it yesterday, this whole diatribe or soliloquy by George is great because it shows specifically the whole idea of, you know, who George is. George, you know, on the one hand, he's trying to emulate his father. On the other hand, he's actually surpassed his father, you know, especially by the way he's defending, you know, he's not just at this point, he's not just defending his father. He's also defending the building and loan. That is something that's needed, you know, because beforehand we talked earlier in the week that on the one hand, he was defending his father, but he was making fun of the building and loan. But here he's basically saying, well, this community needs the building and loan because without this, you know, we got nothing. So, you know, everyone has to deal with Potter. And that's it. So, I mean, I like the fact that he's in control. You know, his whole, I mean, obviously this is a script and it must have been rehearsed many times and stuff like that. But you can see that George is in control. He hasn't completely lost his temper. He's angry, but he's in a defensive mode, you know, trying to make sure that he can defend both his father's legacy and the building and loan at the same time, which I think is great.
Yeah.
You know, and I love the way that he uses the word galling.
The terms of a friend of mine used to have a girlfriend, her last name was Gall, so I used to always use that term around her just to try to gall her as well, but I was happy to see it pop up within these minutes.
Do you know what the official definition of galling is?
I understand it to mean sort of be like taken aback and a little bit horrified by things. To be sort of aghast is to be, you know.
Aghast is one of them. It could also be annoying, humiliating, irritating, exasperating, obsolete. You know, things like that. But yeah, it's you
again,
got the gist of it.
Yeah. Again, one of the Potter been afraid of being obsolete is also would work quite well for him as well too, because if starts letting these things go, then who's ever going to need him, you know? So it all blends beautifully together.
That's right. Yeah, they do a nice job of that, you know. And he talked earlier, he mentioned the fact that he's a warped, frustrated old man. So the whole idea of being warped is he's basically bent out of shape. You know, he doesn't look at things in a straight fashion. You know, everything needs to be skewed somehow and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I think that works quite well, the way that they have that there. And I mean, throughout this whole thing, George also shows how intelligent he is. you know, we can see that George has paid good attention to everything that's going on here. You know, he on the one hand, he could talk about the fact that he is not happy about being in the building and loan, but he still understands it.
Yes, yes. It's I think again, it all too is so like he was almost out the door as well.
That's
he
right.
Literally leaving. And it's just the fact like it's again, it's almost Potter running his mouth too much. It's like if you just held back a little, man, you could have saved yourself the aggravation of just like
that's right. Why even argue? He would have just closed down the building alone, and that would have been it.
But
like I mean, that goes to the core of George Bailey. George Bailey cannot allow that to happen. To him, it's important to stand up for the little people, you know. Which again, that's something that most Capra movies talk about, you know, the idea of standing up for the people who can't stand up for themselves, and you know, for the poor and for the weak. And again, which is goes back to what we're talking about, the fact that you know there are some communist socialist views of what this movie is trying to say from that very perspective, But again, it still works. You know, I think they do a nice job of the way that they present that.
Yeah.
And you know, always having to get and also the term that he uses, one horse institution. Mm. You know, which I like that. I mean, my interpretation of one, I tried looking it up and the only thing I could find was It's a Wonderful Life. Whenever I looked that up, surprisingly.
I guess the term one horse town is be much more commonly used. Like that would be, I guess he's just doing a variation on that terminology with the, you know, swapping out town for institution.
I mean, my personal interpretation of it means, you know, like usually you have, you know, two horses that are pulling a stagecoach or pulling a wagon or whatever it is. And the idea here is that this is a poor institution that we can only afford one horse to do that. And therefore, therefore it's something that will take longer to do.
Yeah.
You know, we have a destination. It's going to take us just longer to get there because we only have one horse pulling us as opposed to two horses.
I think the term always makes me think of, one horse town always makes me think of, back in the early years of Family Guy, once it was, you know, when it was a watchable show way back when, and they had one of their best cutaways, which is like, oh, you know, that place, that's a one horse town, and it just cuts to like an empty town with like one horse standing in the street going like, you shut up, no, you shut up, no, you shut up, talking to himself, and it's going like, what was that? The wind. it's a great joke.
Sounds like that. And so Potter has to get the last word in here, and he goes, sentimental hogwash, I want my motion.
How was that too? Then Lionel Barrymore played like Ebenezer Scrooge live on radio for like 20 straight years or something he did as well. It's like, you can really see that he's like, well, I could do Potter because I've done this character before. Like, he might as well be saying, bah humbug, you know, let them, are there no poorhouses? Are there no, you know?
Which character do you think is worse, Scrooge or Potter?
Well, I guess so, because I guess Scrooge goes into being worse because he does have the follow-up line of like, you know, going like, oh, many people would rather die than go into those places. Like, oh, perhaps they should decrease the surplus population. Like that's a real level of callousness. I don't think Potter is actively just going, we'll just let people die in the streets. I don't care. Like, at least he's still, if he sees people as cattle, he's still getting something out of them. So I guess maybe he still wants people alive just in poverty rather than Scrooge is just like, I don't care about anybody. Like, they can die for a while. Like, as long as I'm okay, I don't give a crap. Scrooge is very much, he's a very closed off character. He only cares about himself. Whereas Potter does seem to have this little bit of like, he wants power over the community, but at least there's still, he's still got some level of engagement with people. So I'd say Scrooge is potentially worse than Potter. What do you think?
I actually think Potter's worse.
I
don't think that Potter would be redeemed so easily by three ghosts visiting him.
Again, though, there should be Disney should be out there doing Ryan Gosling is Potter in like his own version of A Christmas Carol or something, where you see like the ghost of Christmas present is James Stewart, and the ghost of Christmas past is Mrs. Deagle or whatever. Like, it's now I'm kind of talking myself into making this. It's like, oh, maybe could I do a fan production of Potter's Christmas Carol?
Don't know.
And then the ghost of Christmas future is obviously Peter Bailey. It's the specter of Peter Bailey in a hood.
Yeah, that would actually be very interesting.
Yeah, I'm going.
There you go. You got something to pitch. There you go.
Yeah, I did find out recently, because we talk about it a lot on Miami Minutes, that there is in fact a website that will do. If you go to them and ask, like, does this film have a novelization, and are the rights available? They'll go and go, no, but we will, if you write it, we will publish it for you. And so there's a whole big kerfuffle where someone went to like an unauthorized version of the novelization of Halloween 5, and it caused a whole big stir in the internet for a bit and stuff. But we've been talking about, like, we should be really doing a novelization of Miami Connection that we can just hand to this company and then get that printed with like a cool cover and stuff, and that'll be our project. Oh, now wow. I'm kind of going like, yeah, maybe I could do It's a Wonderful Life, and then just add on a lengthy coda that's just A Christmas Carol, but with Potter. I was like, yeah, the first 30 pages is A Wonderful Life. The rest of it's secretly this project. And then, yeah, I'll market it as It's a Wonderful Life novelization, you know, colon coda, the death of Henry Potter or whatever.
Who knows?
So I'm just getting a vision now, though. If it happened the same night, and George Bailey's there with like all these people coming to his house, if Potter just showed up like, oh, George, my good friend, and came over and tried to hug him, do you think George Bailey would be like, oh, great, or like, get the hell out of my house, Potter, you goddamn asshole. Like, that's right. Really want to see that scenario, like the same exact day. Then Potter walks in too. He's like, oh, yeah, I was faking that the whole time. And everyone, the people just turn on him even more. And then he goes back, and the ghosts are like, oh, yeah, I guess I probably should have chosen a different night.
Right, but again, the whole thing with George, it happens at night. So, and, you know, Scrooge is redeemed first thing in the morning. So it would be a little strange. They wouldn't be able to figure. I mean, because, again, the whole bulk of this movie takes place, you know, in the wee hours of the evening, I guess you can say. You know, when George decides he's going to go, you know, get rid of the greatest gift that he ever received. I don't know. That's about interesting to think about that, though. Yeah.
Just imagine, like, yeah, Zuzu walking along and is like, you, girl, what day is it? It's like, Mr. Potter, my dad told me to go fuck yourself. that's
all right. And he goes, go get me the biggest Christmas turkey you can find. Exactly. All right.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm making this project happen.
There you go. Now go for it. Go for it. I you have my blessing to do it. I think it would work. All right. So every Thursday we have a segment called Jimmy Stewart Thursday, where my guests will give their top five Jimmy Stewart performances. So start with your number five and work your way up.
Okay. So yeah, this one is this was almost a bit more of like Jimmy Stewart's been in so many great movies. he's such a beloved and great actor. It was tough narrowing these ones down, quite frankly. So a lot of it I'm going more for, I think his best performance, his actual best performance.
No, but start with number five.
Isn't it? Oh, okay. All right. So start with number five. This is only at the bottom for in terms of his performance, but I actually think it's a movie I really, really, really love. Is Bell, Book, and Candle.
Oh, yeah.
His other Christmas classic that kind of gets brushed under the rug. But I love, if people haven't seen or encountered Bell, Book, and Candle, it's got, it's him reteaming with Kim Novak from Vertigo. And
would you call it a, she's a witch. You would call she's it a Christmas witch. Movie or more of a Halloween?
No, I watch it every Christmas. It is a Christmas movie. It's set over Christmas and into the new year. And yeah, it's a, over Christmas in like the mid 60s, early 60s, Kim Novak is a witch who runs a shop, and she sort of runs afoul of Jimmy Stewart, and then eventually they fall in love. But and she's doing, it's kind of like a precursor to Bewitched. I'm pretty sure the people who made Bewitched just saw Bell, Book, and Candle and were like, oh, we can make a TV show out of that, and just went and ripped it off entirely, because a lot of it's just Jimmy Stewart trying to cope with, like, the fact that his, you know, he's not aware that his girlfriend's a witch for most of it, but, like, it's him coping with all the weird stuff that's happening around him as a result of her witchcraft. But the big thing about that movie, why I love it so much, is that Kim Novak is part of, like, you know, a coven, and the other members of the coven are Jack Lemmon, as, like, his kind of young, like, hip beatnik kind of witch, and Elsa Lanchester, who of course is, like, you know, famously the Bride of Frankenstein. It was one of my favorite actresses. I absolutely love Elsa Lanchester, and so every year I watch Bell, Book, and Candle because I love Jimmy Stewart, I love Jack Lemmon, I love Elsa Lanchester, and I think that's just a fantastic film. Technically, it's not actually a great movie, but the presence of those three actors, and Kim Novak's great too, but, like, she's just a very kind of cool character in the background. She doesn't get to do as much. So that's one. I highly recommend that film to people. But I say, in terms of performance of Jimmy Stewart, he's kind of like coasting. He's not doing all that much in terms of proper acting. Then I'd say probably after that, Harvey, the movie I really, really love. I think he's doing a great job in that as well. The sort of, like, is a broken man, but broken in different ways to George Bailey. Like, he's kind of gone into, like, oh yeah, this guy's completely destroyed, but, like, he's gone into a different direction with it this time, which is just really, really terrific film as well. Then also put in a movie I just have a lot of sentimentality around, because I watch it with my dad a lot, is the Glenn Miller Story.
Oh yeah,
you know, cool. Jimmy Stewart played the great, infamous band leader, infamous, famous band leader, Glenn Miller. And this is a great, you know, warm, just convivial, just, you know, it's just classic James Stewart. I don't know how much like James Stewart Glenn Miller was, but in my mind, the two are essentially the same man. And then I put, so that's three, so we've got two left. Then I guess I'd have to put Vertigo, which just feels a bit like, you know, I feel like everybody says Vertigo, kind of thing, because it's such a classic. But it's such a classic for a reason. And I guess that's because, as much as, you know, I love him in Rear Window, and I love him as, you know, the Shop Around the Corner, the warm, you know, everyone's favorite uncle, Jimmy Stewart. I love the fact that in Vertigo, he goes in a different direction with it. And also, he starts off that way, and then he becomes a much, much darker presence. It's a much more sinister movie. And it kind of makes you think, like, oh yeah, this guy does have range. That he becomes like a weirdly threatening presence throughout it. It's a really, really terrific performance. And then, yeah, number one is this movie. Jimmy Stewart is fantastic in this film. And I think he was riffing a lot on his own sort of PTSD from World War II when he was making it, right?
I believe, you know, so. This was the first movie that he made after World War II, yes.
Yeah, and the scenes of him, like, particularly when George is at his lowest, and there's a real genuine rawness in Stewart's performance, and it's so, like, you can really, really feel the emotion pouring out, particularly, you know, because some older films too can be a bit stagey, and they can be a bit, you know, a bit rusty, because it's all stage actors coming in, and they're not quite sure how to present on camera the way, because they're used to letting everything, you know, play into the back seats, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a real intimacy in some of his scenes, and you really, really get into the soul of George Bailey. And yeah, he does an absolutely fantastic performance in this film. So I would put this as, it wouldn't be my favorite Jimmy Stewart movie if I had to choose between this and Bell, Book, and Candle. I'll be like, oh, I'm going for the crazy witch movie he made. Because the fact that that's a more fun movie. But I have to say, in terms of actual performance by the actor, this would be I think this is his best work, for sure. What's your favorite, Rob?
You're gonna have to wait until the final episode this season to find out where that works. Yeah. Sorry, you're gonna have to hold out another almost 100. That's right. You're gonna have to wait almost 100 more episodes to find that out. Sorry.
You say every time a bell rings, Movie Rob finally reveals his
that's right,
his favorite Jimmy Stewart movie.
There you go. All right, Niall, you want to once again tell people where they can find Niall McGowan?
Well, also, you know, you can find me on all normal social media. You know, the only one not podcast related that I'll plug a bit is I am on Instagram these days under the name DoodleSoup89. That's where I put up a lot of my artwork. I do art from time to time. If you look at, you know, the Batman logos and stuff, I made all those. And yeah, and mostly Instagram is just it's just me messing around, putting up artwork and sharing memes and having little chats with people from time to time. It's a very pleasant experience over there. So yeah, you can find me on that if you know, for non-podcasting things. You know, I'm not on Twitter or anything. I'm on Facebook too, but you see, you're not missing anything over there. I don't know why you'd want to talk to me as a random stranger. So
yeah, never know. Maybe they do.
Yeah,
why not?
Yeah. All right. Remember, sometimes we've had some weird messages coming in the Batman Instagram. Let me tell you as well. There's some people, particularly when we're going through the Schumacher. Genuinely, there's one person in particular kept messaging, who has like a distinct fetish for certain scenes in those Schumacher movies. And seemed to think that we also did. It was a bit like, okay, man, like, I don't know what you want us to say to, you know, to these very sleazy messages of talking about, like, how hot the scene is. But we're like, you know, thumbs up, I guess, or whatever. But yeah, so please don't send me messages like that. Send that to the Batman Instagram, by all means.
All right.
But just not my personal.
There you go. Makes sense. All right. So, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, and you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. So now you feel like coming back again tomorrow to finally get out of this room? We've been stuck in this room for 4 days.
I'm going to dust my feet off of this one horse room and go out and see the big wide bank outside.
All right. Great. So, until tomorrow, hot dog.
Hot dog.
I love you truly, truly dear. Life with its sorrow, life with its tears.